Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to class 2, stats 252, spring 2007. Search is the topic of today's class. Very, very briefly, I was extremely impressed by the quality the 5 or 6 of you produced on the class. And in the break today, I need another group of 5 or 6 people who are willing to be responsible for starting this week's class wiki. So that was a really very successful attempt. Congratulations to you. And also congratulations to all of the other 15 people participated in getting a really good list of what we did in the last class up on the web. Work 1, I know it wasn't all that easy. I actually spent a few hours myself and have a somewhat revised PHP script up on the web for who might want to have somewhat better code than what originally. I wanted to put up a couple of remarks which I saw were really creative uses of the problem. And one of you is looking for a secondhand car. So that's a beautiful example, just, you know, write the script to look for the car. Second one was to think about Reddit, which is a bookmarking site, delicious, and try and understand what actually are the number of comments, what are the relationships there. The third quiz we had was related to the Netflix challenge last year, and that was IMDb, Amazon's International Movie Database, which could be called. And the last one was looking at relevant link densities on different Wikipedia topics. So these were just some of the examples you came up with. The purpose, bigger picture purpose, of the first homework was that you get comfortable with 2 sources of data. 1 source of data is the source of data which you find elsewhere, where you go out, like you to find something. Where out on the web, where you use a crawler, and unless somebody doesn't allow you to crawl, you can get to those data. In the third homework, we'll talk about so-called APIs, where you don't have to crawl anymore, but you can mark up data, and we'll use Delicious's site for that, where you don't have to do the crawling, but you get the data in a cleaner and richer form. But the first was, you can get to data automatically using, in this case, a PHP script. The second source of data, and I love the idea of putting it up on the course wiki and asking people to please click on my page. The second source of data was that you looked at what's happening on your own page. And again, the purpose of this was that it just becomes clear to you that this is not magic, which you need to know in order to see what's happening, but it's just looking, in this case, at the weblog. The second homework will be built on that. And for the second homework, we'll take your page and we'll make sure you make some money with that. And it's your choice who you want to make money from. You can use Google AdWords, or Ads actually. You can use Yahoo, and we have actually my pots here, who I was teaching in 93 at the summer school, time passes, and who is at Yahoo. And the third choice is we have some people from Microsoft, and we want to have parity here. The third choice is that you can actually use Microsoft Advertising Network to put some ads on your page. I leave that up to you. The purpose here is that you see, again, that there is no matter, that it's pretty simple. You just have to have some text on it, and then it's the purpose that you understand how the text might actually get the ads on the page. So that's how the homeworks fit together. Today, we're doing search. And the search today, I have a number of parts. First, I'm going to talk about how we actually do search desktop. Search on the intranet, not an easy problem, and then only to return to the search on the web. For the search on the web, the key problem is not to find something, but the key problem is to rank something. So machine learning comes in to help us show those results out of the whatever 30,000 results if you enter Andreas Weiss, which might be actually the ones you're interested in, as opposed to some random reference somewhere. Particularly today, since we talk about intent search data, we're going to focus on what data sources do we use for doing the search. Some of these data are data on site. Other data are data about the site, such as links people put in. You've probably all heard of the PageRank algorithm Google has. Data could be dynamic data, where you click on the site, or if I show you a choice, a list of certain links, which of them is it that you... We then talk about economics, namely about online advertising, or as we used to call it,
the monetization, because people were wondering 10 years ago, there'll be search engines and they get some VC money, but will they ever make money? And the answer is not really by selling, but by using principal economics, auctions, and auctioning off that space on other people's sites. Very clever. So I will talk a little bit about online advertising and why it is so important and why it's so important to grow. Worldwide advertising is about $400 billion and online is order of $10 billion only. But 30% of people's time is spent online. So there's a big mismatch on how little money is spent on poor companies like Yahoo compared to how much time is spent on people's eyeballs on those sites compared to looking at newspaper articles and stuff like that. There is that we'll discuss the different models of monetization and how to move smoothly from one to the other. Effectively, you can one into the other, and that's actually a very, very, very interesting area. And then in the last part in class, as you know from the email I sent for access accounts yesterday, I think we have another iteration of the courses going through class, so you can actually mark up. If we still don't have this right, you get another chance for us to get it right. That at the end of class today, we have an old friend of mine, Jan Pedersen, who's the chief scientist at Yahoo's Search and Marketplace, tell us about what he thinks is the future of search. And specifically, he's going to talk about social search. Social search falls into two categories. There is broadcast search, like Yahoo Answers, where you basically having no idea about something, broad world who has no idea about anything either, somebody who has no clue writes back to you, and then maybe you're done. Versus targeted search. And then, being this class here about data, the question is, what information sources can you use to do targeted search? One example is all the queries you have done in the past. They say something you're interested in. Or all the pages you have tagged on Delicious. They say something you've paid attention to. Or finally, all the stuff sitting on your hard drive, because that probably is somewhat related to the knowledge you have or to your interests in areas where you probably are able to answer queries better than other people. So that's the plan for today. Any questions so far? No? Okay. So we don't need the screen right now. It used to be hard to find something because that little post that you wrote and stuck somewhere in some book, you just wish you remembered which book it was. But by basically having digital records of everything, modular typos, you are able to relatively easily find all the notes you ever wrote. So while it used to be difficult to find something, it become actually very easy to find stuff. Now, how does that happen on the desktop? In the old days, before we had desktop search, like X1, Yahoo, or Google, or MSN, before that, we had to remember where we put things. What a pain. I never remember where I put things, because categories shift over time. It used to be under whatever Stanford teaching, and then I reuse the slides at Tsinghua, and suddenly it doesn't fit there very hard. So we want to build in some way, an automatic way of entering a keyword and be able to find something which we have on our desktop. Right now we're talking about desktop search. So one way of search is, and you probably learned about search algorithms in computer science classes, that you basically go through the entire file system, the file, and look for that string. Now, storage is growing faster than view time, and then I/O. So getting through my little files, 17 years ago when I had a laptop which didn't have a hard disk, because who needed a hard disk when you have one floppy stuff there, you know? That actually was not that much to go through that 1.44 megabyte, not gigabyte, megabyte. Now with 100 gig on a hard drive, it takes quite a while to actually we're going to search through everything from sector to sector on the hard drive. So the idea is, what? An index. You once go through your entire hard drive. And in English, actually, it's not that hard. If there is a space, then you consider the thing before the space and after the space as individual words. Chinese, now looking around here, half of you being Chinese, is much harder because there's not that obvious word segmentation. Or Thai language, for instance, you just write without actually having inter-word spaces. So we are quite lucky in English and in German that we can just use spaces between words as segmentation. So I go through all my files, and whenever a string appears, I see, hey, have you seen that string before? If yes, I say, good, and I enter the name of the file to that entry of that string. If I haven't seen it before, I just start a new entry and say, okay, that's the first time I'm seeing this string. What about typos? You know, instead of by again, END, people write it in some other way, AND. What should we do about typos? What do you think? How should we do that? So if I don't know whether it's skater with a TER or TR, how should we deal with the two spellings? What do you think?
I mean, I think figure out the permutations of each letter from the index of every word count and then see if there is a much higher.
So actually, in this case, the best thing is not to do anything about it. But if you have not encountered a certain string yet, you don't map it onto something else. You just want to count it as if it is a new string and new legitimate word. Later on, we can figure out statistics that people who write this actually usually end up looking at that. So we might help them this way. But right now, when we build the index, typos are actually used as typos. And I invite you, those of you who have difficult names, just to look on your hard drive with one of the search tools and see how often your name actually got misspelled by other people. I'm just surprised. Okay. So what we have now built is we have index, and that means that we can, with blazing speed, find anything we have ever put on our. If any of you does not use a desktop search engine, then I think the most important thing you can do in today is just install one of the standard ones, and it will change your life, because you'll suddenly find stuff you never knew that you actually still had. Now, that is desktop search. Now to intranet. So intranet means typically within a firewall, what the knowledge is a given organization has. Help me out here. What's similar and what's different to desktop search? Say you work at IBM and you're interested in some internal document. What's similar is that you still have the notion of some kind of a file system. Because those computers in some way are somewhat connected, and somewhere you can traverse that, starting somewhere and going down all the way, and index it. So notice between intranet search and desktop search. The big difference becomes now from going from desktop search or internet search to the web. What is the key difference here? So on the internet desktop you have the file, you know what the path is, if you will. There is no repository for the path on information on the World Wide Web. So whereas here you can go through the directory and go one file after the other and go up one level and you go down to the next level, you know, find and all these things, I'm sure in modern operating systems there are similar things. That doesn't exist on the web. The notion of, you know, I traverse a directory is not happening. What is that replaced by on the web? Thinking about your homework.
The links for the...
Yes, so it is replaced by a crawl. Homework, you just went to the one site, Craigslist or whatever you went to, and tried to find out on that list are the pages. You remember the first part of the homework, the script where you had a list returned of, I think, 100 links, that was finding out what files out in the web. And that is then where
sort of computer science issues come in, namely, how do we do that crawler? For instance, you could decide that you go very deep right away, or you could get very broad at the beginning. So that's one question, breadth versus depth. Another question for the so-called crawl policy is how often do you refresh the pages? For instance, if you take the New York Times, well, you probably want to crawl it at least once a day if you want to know what's going on the world. On the other hand, Weigand.com is not that exciting, and maybe it's enough if you crawl it once a week to see whether anything has changed. So already there, you have algorithms which give you ideas of how do you update your index. You look for new stuff based on what you observe. A couple of slides here. What is hard about search? It used to be hard that you find stuff. What's easy now is to find stuff. What's hard is that we move from the information production world, where people get paid for producing information, to the information finding world, or the information filtering world, or the information ranking world. And we already talked about the ingredients here, which is the index, that you need to crawl, or some people call this, we need to spider. And then once we have that, we need to talk about relevance. This couple of slides, what happened in the work before there was actually search engines. In those days, you maybe guessed what the URL might have been. So you want to go somewhere, and a good number of them ended at whatever, Panasonic.com, if they wanted to look at something. Or there was also those old idea that, and that's how Yahoo actually started. The idea was we could create directories. This old idea of, you know, the thing work that I move something from one place to another one and I can't remember where I put it, that we create structures where people could pitch. That idea of having a directory structure has been replaced by just allowing people to do, namely by just tagging stuff. So the difference is, in a directory, you have to work with a structure somebody gives you. To scratch your head and say, well, is this really about Thai food, or is it about Vietnamese food, or is it about fusion food? Oh, gee, no, I don't know. Or is it about restaurants in Palo Alto versus, you know, restaurants somewhere else? Tagging is, and some people are having a taxonomy in directories. We have a tagsonomy for tags. Tagging is basically replacing this, but you add whichever word you want to add to it. So if Jerome feels like adding word A to it, and somebody else feels like working another word to it, all the power to you. Okay, but I'm getting ahead of myself here. The old idea was, and that's how you wanted to use so-called expert surfers, people surf the web, and once they find something interesting, they put it in the right box. Then you had early surfers. Some of you might remember some of those terms, and the idea was there to crawl, to extract the words from the web, and then match the user input to those words. Matching the user inputs is a little bit tricky, because in some cases, the user might not really exactly know how to spell it, or there might be different words which denote the same thing, but the user actually used one, and the page has another one. So now we move to the problem of relevance. And I want to talk to you here in the spirit of data. What information sources do we have for relevance? One, data within the page. So if you were given the problem, and I will extract you here, if you were given the problem that you have a page, an HTML page, similar to the page you made, how do you use information within the page differentially in order to decide whether a certain page is ranked higher or lower? So for example, if it says Andreas Weigand at the header versus if it says at, you know, somewhere 5 kilometers down from the top, Andreas Weigand, which of those two is more relevant if you enter Andreas Weigand? Probably the one 5 kilometers down, right? So location on the page is one element. Let's look at other things here. The number of occurrences of the search term on the page. So
if something once mentions me versus if something mentions me 10 times, everything else being equal is, of course, not the case. In that case, the one where more is more important. Meta tags. So I'm not sure whether you looked at your HTML, but you have the option of there in specific tags, so-called meta tags. So words which might not be part of your site, like, for instance, free porn is not part of my site. However, you might put this in a meta tag, which means that people looking for free porn, then end up at buying.com. So they probably won't be particularly happy about it, because that's not really what they were looking for, but I get more traffic. So that was sort of the old thing 10 years ago. Hey, you know, if you get eyeballs to your page, 1/3 of all sessions at Amazon.com are so-called single-hit sessions. So 1/3 of all visits, whatever you want to call it, I'm very easy about the notation here, 1/3 of those people who arrive only get one hit and are out of there. So is that a big deal? Is that a great thing? Is it an awful thing? Good thing, bad thing?
There's a lot of potential to tap on these people who visit once.
Yes, so you're right. There is a lot of potential of people, but they just come to one side and out. You not do any click at Amazon. So again, it is that some person, let's say, has a page on, you know, Russian history in the 12th century, and then there's a link to Amazon. And the last person who is deeply engrossed in Russian history in the 12th century is now to learn about new mobile phones at Amazon. So I think people used to be very happy about visitors, and you know, this notion of unique visitors, which some people still have, comes from the old world where people have papers and they count how many papers do they sell. They call it reach. That has been carried over to the web, as most notions always come from a world where the language was created before, but is less and less important. Also, side remark, very interesting how you can lie with statistics. So this statement was absolutely true, that 1/3 of all sessions on .com are single-hit sessions. However, and that sounds really, you know, worth talking about, we're talking about in board meetings. However, if you actually weigh it by the number of clicks, if you say how many clicks at Amazon.com, or what percentage of the clicks at Amazon.com are actually single-hit clicks, or belong to single-hit sessions, it's the order of 1 or 2%. So it's just so important that, you know, you guys understand how you actually normalize it with respect to what. And if it is with respect to unique visitors, that's sort of the notion that somebody goes to a store, which means lots of transactions. He has to move his butt over there and show up. And there's a big switching cost to go from one store, get in your car, and go to the next store. That's why unique visitors can greet and meet at, you know, Walmart or whatever. Not so in the online world. Clicks are much more important than the notion of visitors. What I want to say here simply with meta tags, this group of points here, back to search, are data sources going to rank stuff, to rank pages, to rank search results by information within the page. Next group goes to static link structure. So who of you has heard of the page rank algorithm? Okay. Who of you actually has read the paper of the page rank algorithm? Okay. I actually, there was one of those papers, I remember it was 99 in Northern Illinois in the summer school, that somebody gave me that paper at an evening at a bar when we had our Prosecco. And I ignored the rest of the conversation. It was just such an interesting idea that you use the link structure, not only what you do on the page, but you do what others do to your page. So if you have really a cool page and lots of people point to your page, I'm not sure, what's your name? Changsong, let's say, has a really cool page. You all think Changsong's page is really cool, you link to him. Whereas my page is really lame. Let's say we have exact content on our pages, but just no one links to me. Everyone just links to Changsong. Then what does that mean for ranking? Is that there's something about Changsong's page, or Changsong something about him, that is more relevant in the of anything else than my page? Big remark. PageRank does not depend on the search term. PageRank is a property of the page, end of story. That's a very, very important assumption. Because Changsha's page might be for Korean food. But when it's about conference in Germany next week, my page might be more relevant. However, PageRank is a property of the page and does not depend on the search term. By the way, if there are any modifications, I know we have a bunch of people in Google here and Yahoo and Microsoft. If there's anything which has changed to what I'm saying because I'm not really getting it, please do correct me. So I'm more than happy to learn from the various parts of expertise in the class. So what we are talking about here, in the simplest case, the number of links going into the page. Why is that an important dimension? We talked about intention data, which is today. We talked about click data, which is last week. We're talking about action, which is next week. The links going into your page already is a matter of somebody expressing attention to you. Somebody page, and that means they think it's worth looking at your page. It's not only intention data, but it's attention data. And in every single case here, as we talked about free porn over there, the meta tags, here you have whole link farms of people including the people who link and so on. And that is, of course, then something which search engines always get smarter about and trying to figure out how people are trying to cheat, and they, like in an arms race, they're trying to avoid that. So far, we've said there are two data sources for relevance. First data source for relevance is inside the page. Second source of relevance is the link structure from outside the page.
If I were to put a page on my Stanford.edu personal website versus just if I bought a random domain name and content there, would I be ranked higher because of the Stanford.edu domain?
I would expect so. So nobody, I think, really knows all the details at a current point in time on what the search engines are doing in terms of this algorithm organic search results. Right now, by the way, just to be really clear, we're talking about what we call organic search results, which is when you go to Yahoo, Google, and get the links on the left-hand side, where you don't pay for it. And it makes total sense that anything and everything we can come up with here in class is already in the search engine organics ranking. So for instance, that most people at Stanford might be more relevant than my random domain name.com is presumably in some way aggregated into this complex, super complex algorithm. There are dozens of people I would expect at each of these companies who just try to figure out. Do you want to say the number Yahoo roughly?
Dozens
is a good enough number, isn't it? Okay. Yeah. Now the third element here is not the static link structure, but the dynamic behavior, link behavior. So let's say I'm going to show you 10 results in response to the client. If nobody clicks on the first, second, third, but everybody clicks on the fourth one, then there's something about the link which makes people click on the fourth link. No, you should say. Bullshit. It's not about what's at the fourth page. It's just what those couple of lines say about the fourth page. So there's something then about that couple of extracted lines on the fourth page which makes people actually click on this link. So that for the purpose of re-ranking search results, it means that there is something there, we don't know what it is, but let's move that guy up a little bit, or let's give it a little bit more juice. Let's give it a little bit more page rank in a non-strict sense. But the information, of course, only depends on what the user actually sees. But in the intention data, I intend to find something, I then show you, I search and show you something, and then you still don't know what the page is. You only know what the two-line abstract of the page is. So those are the three big groups of data which we can use to determine relevance. Any comments from you here? Yes.
Link structure.
Yep.
Sometimes the same page have the different addresses. Amazon Associates having
yes.
Another URL, but
yep.
It's point to the same product.
Yeah.
In that case, that different URL is affected to the some page rank or page.
Okay. Good point. There is a rich field, not a very rigorous field.
but like chemistry as opposed to physics. Really, people having recipes, and this is called search engine optimization. And it is actually extremely relevant. Let me first explain to the class your example, because when we were at Amazon.com, we really did not do a good job in having consistent mappings from URL to products. And as your example was, if somebody maybe actually has a funny URL because his associate ID is in there, then while the product is there in Amazon's reputable site, it just doesn't have the same URL as the standard product page. Here's another example. Is an example of how the ecosystem really determines the vagaries and fluctuations of Google. I mentioned in the abstract of the class that there are some. One internship I have is at a company in Thailand called Agoda. A-G-A. Typing, spelling out things is not easy for non-natives here. But so the example here is Agoda. And before they were called precisionreservations.com, which is not really just as, you know, pregnant, Agoda, precisionreservations.com. And they changed their domain name, basically, from precision reservations, where if you entered one of the 27,000 hotels they have in Southeast Asia, they usually were in the search of organic results, to Agoda.com, and were nowhere to be found anymore. So their business, having, you know, tens of thousands of hits every day, of sales every day, went down to a few hundred. So now, this is an example of where some renaming suddenly absolutely kills the business because the search engines don't know about you. And it's not clear what should be the role of the big search engines, such as Google in this case, to actually work with people who want to use the service and sell their keywords and so on. So yes, these are important problems, and I think every problem has occurred already, every conceivable problem, but there are so many, and it's, as I said, more like chemistry than physics, so you just try to fix things. Any other comments? Okay. So, and we talked about web search. I think I gave you, did I give you in class already the example of Amazon and the publishers, how the publishers were not happy before they saw the results that Amazon was actually scanning their books? Yeah, so here, search inside the book is an example of actually not only search on the web, because if you think about it, the web actually doesn't have much. Brewster Kahle makes the argument that storing the entire costs about as much as his garage in San Francisco. And storing the entire web actually fits on, well, basically would fit on this table these days. If you don't know about it, there's something called archive.org, which is the Internet Archive. Here, for instance, are, for my little Weigand.com page, the various and sundry snapshots they took last few years since 2002. And if I dare click on, you know, one random thing here, it just shows you the page which I had those days. Not that different actually from now. and so if anybody has a page, does anybody has a personal page? I showed you mine, so you know. You showed me yours?
It's not personal, it's a company or a startup from 99.
Oh, but it can be, I don't mind, it can be your current page. So what is it?
Datesite.com.
Say again?
D-A-T-E
okay. So that's interesting that they were then down 2003 and then they came up again.
Yeah,
Okay, and that's what it looked like in the early days.
Yeah.
Love Train, the director online store. So we could, for instance, look at yahoo.com. It's always good to embarrass people in the room. Um, 23,000 pages. Yahoo looked like a few years ago, not 12 years ago. That's what.
always good.
So something has changed, right? That is Yahoo Deutschland, Yahoo Endless. Long story short, it's actually not that expensive to store everything, and everything is stored, which brings us back to the point of Mitch Lassie, that once you've released something to the public, it is there forever. How many searches do people do in a day? Any idea? So before we do that, let me give you another piece of information here, which is all in the physical world versus order of magnitude in the digital world. So on the right-hand side, we have the virtual world, left-hand side, the physical world. And I'm just looking at a few things. For instance, about in bodies, in beds, in hotels, in IT, in the United States. About a million in seats on airplanes in the United States. About a million. In Shanghai, about a million people in cabs. About 50,000 cabs in Shanghai. By the way, more than the entire Federal Republic of Germany. In the virtual world, it's typically a billion. Roughly a billion emails, it's roughly a billion web searches. And if you look into China alone, where the numbers, it's about a billion SMSs a day. So the point I want to make here is, if you have something in the physical world, it's typically orders of millions. And if you have something in the virtual world, it's typically something dollar bills. And you can come up more examples, but if you up here, that's really, if somebody wants to know how many searches do people a day, order of a billion. So in little more detail, here we are. These are the numbers which already a few years back, didn't update the slides here. The estimate from January 2005 was a billion, but maybe even if it's five, it's still the same order of magnitude. No, I'm a physicist, and one significant digit is big enough here. And this were the search engines, and that's roughly from, as said, like 3 years ago. Is there any public numbers of how many searches Yahoo does a day or Google does a day? Somebody from Google in class today, as opposed to only on the SCPD network. One person promised to come today. Is you?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So do you know the numbers? Okay, never mind. okay, last couple of remarks on search before we guess.
Didn't you say they had two-thirds of the search market, so two-thirds of a billion is 600 million?
No, the billion is the question, because the billion is an old number. So Google search market, Google's market penetration is dramatically different in different parts of the world. In China, Google is actually decreasing on absolute numbers, which is pretty amazing in a country where the internet growth is, you know, 2x, 3x a year, to manage to actually go down in absolute numbers. Europe and Germany is like 80-something percent. In the US might be like 60%. Actually, I don't know the exact numbers. It's very interesting, actually, why these big regional differences worth thinking about. I don't know the answer. Anything else before we go on here? The one point I want to make, and I run through that very quickly before we go to the monetization. Vertical search is one field, which, or a bunch of fields, which is very different from web search as a whole. Take travel. If I enter LAX SFO into my favorite search engine, probably not going to be very good in telling me what time of day United Airlines is flying, right? So extracting such information
from the so-called deep web, which are the underlying databases, and making them useful for users, is something which is called vertical search. If you really think about it, a lot of the search market, lots of search information, is actually vertical search. And I've given you some examples here. Shopping comparison is a great example of search. That you want to know that matrix switcher or something like that. It's not really web search, but it's a vertical search. Where can I buy? Cameras are a beautiful example. DPReview.com, digital photo review, is just awesome in terms of what they do with having deep, deep data about cameras. Insurance. Think about insurance. Yes, you do get some paper, I gather, that you're insured, but ultimately insurance is information good. And insurance is a very inefficient market. Most of you probably have students or for your companies. If you're trying to get health insurance yourself because you're doing your own show or something like that, boy, it's such a plethora of offers, and it really is a vertical search problem you have there. Cars. Cars, while physical goods, have a large information component to them. That's why I like the person who actually had as his example for the first homework. Actually, who was it with the used car example? Was somebody in class or somebody from the 30 students SCPD? So how do you remember? No. Who was the car person? Was you? Okay, great. So that's that example. Because cars, getting a used car, is a beautiful example of, once again, an information good. That is an information component. Let me actually tell you a story. There's a company called Majestic Research. That company called Majestic Research is in New York and gets data from another company in Chicago, which has about 2 million users whose browsers get instrumented. It's called ComScore. So, number one is ComScore. ComScore, by promising you faster download times, you download something which simply changes the security certificate. So you're thinking you're trading with Fidelity, but you're actually talking to ComScore and ComScore Fidelity, and on the way, ComScore de-encrypts and encrypts again. There you're sending, so they know exactly what trade you do. Of course, only in order for being able to do a real job of market research. I think I've heard that Citadel paid, I think, several billion dollars. Billion dollars, not me. For those data, just amazing amounts, which people are supposedly learning from that. But it buys those data from ComScore. Majestic then also spider sites, and among the sites they spider is a company called, I think, Car.com, or CarMax, CarMax.com, a used car site. And so, like you wrote the spider for the used car site in your case, Majestic goes to CarMax and checks out the inventory. Delta in the inventory shows you, of course, whether something got sold or not. Modulo, of course, those expensive cars, which the guy who runs that shop likes to drive, and after 2 weeks puts back in the inventory. So once you put those mistakes, you have a very good idea of how much really CarMax sold. So about 1.5 years ago, CarMax was ready to sort of come out with an amazing announcement how well they are doing. Or they had some guy, it's a public trade company, some guy there. But at 7:10 in the morning, Majestic Research said, we think CarMax will fail to fulfill their target in the earnings announcement. And utterly uncorrelated to that, 3 minutes later, CarMax came out with a revision of the earnings announcement. So it's very interesting, the power you have by having those data out on the web, in this case your used cars, how much you can learn and how much transparency makes the market, in this case of used car companies, not known for their transparency, which makes that market really good. Next example is real estate. Redfin.com is a company, a former person who used to work for me started, is a company in Seattle, which gives people a possibility to learn about houses nicely, of course, with maps and what got sold, in order to not depend on that one random agent who, you know, usually in a nice car drives you to the city and shows you what's best for them, not necessarily best for you.
music, vertical search problem. Local search, people say it's about a $90 billion market. And finally, as I said already, and one of you had as their website 7 years ago, 8 years ago, dating. So these are all examples of vertical. So where are we in class today? Yes, please. Majestic makes its money by along the diagonal where you have few customers who pay lots of money. You have lots of customers who pay just little money, trying to sort of do a versioning along those hedge funds are among the people who pay lots of money. And then for whatever, $1,000, $10,000, you too can buy a subscription of some great research. Majestic is very good for consumer-facing companies. I was surprised and impressed by the eBay versus Amazon.com comparison they had. Because if you have a panel of a couple of people, it's not hard to actually get good statistics about relative growth of these two companies. However, we have some people from Oracle in class. Oracle sales work differently. We already talked about feudal society last time. So Oracle sales work differently. There, it's totally useless to actually have, to try to make inferences. It is really only consumer products, consumer companies, they are able to make good inferences on. Timescale is important. They don't manage to make timescales on the timescale of minutes or seconds or whatever hedge funds do these days who do 5 seconds of trading. But on the long term of a company missing its announcement or overshooting its earnings on, they can do this pretty well. Any other comments? Okay. So what have we done so far? We talked about search. We talked about the data sources, which are in the important search problem of ranking. And we talked about so-called vertical search, which means I try to extract from some vertical. Travel, by the way, is another very good example where you have a company called Mobissimo, which came out of Stanford. It's called Kayak at the East Coast, which really do a good job there, where you extract information and then present that back. Now, search would be an academic exercise if we just had people returning organic search results. So the saying goes that there are two ways of paying for Yahoo or for Google. One way is that you pay some search engine optimization company, as we said, like operations like chemistry, trying to move it up in the organic listings. And now we're going to the second one, which is paying them directly. So what we used to call monetization of search is actually, another word for this is sponsored search or advertising. So the next part of my class, I will talk about online advertising. Let's take a quick, 5 minute break here. It is 4:10. Let's do the second part of online advertising starting sharp at 8:00. Okay?